Eventually, I found Soldier Boy. I reached out to Soldier Boy.
All right.
And I told AJ, I said, hey, tell your brother Soldier Boy is going to be famous. And 2-3 years later, Soldier Boy came out with his hit, Crank That Soldier Boy.
Yeah,
and
no, I remember that.
Gary was driving down the street. AJ freaked out. Gary pulled over. They called me and they're like, you were right. That kid that you picked, he blew up.
You're listening to Pubcast Worldwide.
Greetings, thirsty listeners, and welcome to this episode of Pubcast Worldwide, the podcast where we get to know influential people around the world, chatting with them over beers, cocktails, and other libations at the coolest pubs, bars, and breweries on the planet. I'm your host, Chris Lukey, a global beer aficionado, serial event planner, and a big fan of crushing it on a Monday. Welcome to what is our first ever hip hop episode. I've been waiting a long time to use that pun. Today, we'll be heading to the New York City metro area, specifically Jersey City, to meet up with Mike Boyd, the head of music partnerships and artist relations at VaynerMedia. Now, a couple things about this just to set some context for this interview. Mike is an old high school friend of mine. We both went to DeSmet Jesuit together back in St. Louis. So this is by no means the first conversation Mike and I have ever had. And if you caught the title and you're a fan of the individual I'm about to mention, yes, Mike Boyd works very closely with Gary Vaynerchuk. With that, I think you're in for an exciting episode today, and I want to give you three quick things you can expect to take away from today's show. First, you're going to hear Mike Boyd's story and how he got into hip-hop and his career in music management. You'll get a general sense of what it's like working in the music industry with a couple wild stories along the way. Whether you know and love hip-hop or not, Mike's experiences translate into some great tips on how to be successful when working in a business fueled by creativity and an extreme range of big personalities. Which brings us to the second thing. You'll learn about the dynamics of artist management through Mike's firsthand experiences of working with guys like Rome Fortune and Richie South. You'll hear the tangible characteristics that Mike looks for in artists that are on the rise, how he partners with them, and how he uses social media to engage with and grow a fan base. In my personal opinion, Mike has an uncanny ability to identify talent in the music space, and we'll even get into some of Mike's predictions on what the next big things in hip-hop look like towards the second half of the interview. Finally, and I feel like some of you are probably waiting for this one, we talk about what it's like to work with Gary Vaynerchuk. Now, I'm going to assume a lot of people listening to this know who Gary Vaynerchuk is, but if you're not familiar with him, he's an American serial entrepreneur that's ultimately made his name as the biggest social media guru in the country. But if I'm using my own words, he's pretty much the face of entrepreneurship in the 21st century. Gary is known for his loud, brash personality, but more importantly, his ability to leverage social media to start and scale multiple businesses. Anyway, Mike will give you more on Gary here in a bit, but you're going to hear the story of how Mike first got connected with Gary Vaynerchuk and how hip-hop fits into Gary's brand-building strategy. We'll talk about their Monday-to-Monday playlist, which Mike and Gary co-curate on a weekly basis, and how that's helping them pay it forward with the music community and establish relationships with artists before they become big names. As a side note to their success, when we recorded this episode, that playlist had around 58,000 subscribers on Spotify. Now they're up to about 70,000. Make sure to check out that Monday to Monday playlist after this episode is over. I will have links at pubcastworldwide.com. I know you're probably anxious to start hearing from Mike at this point, but before I forget that drinking is involved in this episode, let's set the stage for today's interview. Mike and I met up at Departed Souls Brewing in Jersey City, just across the Hudson from Manhattan. This is actually a gluten-free brewery. I did not know that going in, but regardless, I didn't even notice because their beers were so good. The spot had a bit of a graffiti, urban, skateboardy vibe to it, and quite frankly, I'm ready to head back there now. So grab your smartphone, catch a train from Manhattan, and make sure to pop in your earbuds so you can listen to some tunes on the way over, and let's travel to Jersey City to meet up with Mike Boyd. Yeah, I
took that drip to the palace. That drip you couldn't even imagine. The drip ain't gonna make me a legend. I hop in that coupe, we got gadgets. I got an FN and it's plastic. Now the small face, I'm getting King Paddock. This juice hunters all over my cell.
Been doing this for a year and a half now. Still haven't spilled on the equipment yet. Good to see you again, man. It's been a while. Cheers.
Great to see you. Cheers, man. Cheers.
Good strong one to kick off with. Nice choice. I'm drinking the deuces right along with you.
Perfect.
So, Mike, where are we? What are we drinking?
We're at Departed Souls, right down the street from where I live in Jersey City. Well, down the street and around the corner. It's not the closest bar, but I love it here.
Yeah.
They have games. They let you order food. It's the local hotspot. They sell it in all the liquor stores on the corner. So, and we're drinking the Deuces Double IPA. I've never had it before, but delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Very delicious.
You just wanted a bunch of alcohol for your first pubcast, so
yeah,
you went
absolutely
with the big one. This is cool. we're like sitting right in the brew house, essentially. It's right behind us, not really blocked off. I like the colors here, a lot of skateboard art.
Yeah.
We've got a game of Connect 4 sitting right behind us, so if it gets noisy later, for those of you listening, you know why. But that shouldn't stop us today. So yeah, fun to finally do a pubcast here in the New York area, and happy to have you on the show. So for those of you listening today, I am joined by Mike Boyd Jr., or do you just go by Mike Boyd most of the time? What are you going by these days?
On social media, it's Mike Boyd Jr., but everyone just calls me Mike Boyd.
All right, yeah. Perfect. That's what we used to do back in the day, so yeah. we're gonna stick with it. Well, Mike Boyd does a handful of things. He does artist management for Richie Souf.
Is that how South.
You say it? South?
Because in Atlanta, he's from the South Side. They spell it with an F. A lot of people get that confused, but yeah, just to clear the air, it's South.
All right. Richie, artist management for Richie South. He is the head of music partnerships and artist relations for Gary Vee. And one other thing on your list right now.
Yeah, right now on my list, I like to tell people that I curate the Monday to Monday playlist on Spotify and Apple Music.
That is possibly your most forward-facing thing you've got going right now.
Yeah.
I was just checking it. I was just listening to it on the way over here. 58,000 subscribers right now. So I was doing a little bit of my homework. I figured that was some required reading before I sat down with you. But, Mike, those are your formal titles. That's kind of just my intro. How would you describe yourself and what it is you do?
I connect the dots. So for Gary, I connect the dots with the musicians that have attention, especially where he wants to be seen. So, you know, Gary loves hip-hop. You know, lucky for me, I love hip-hop too, as you know, but it's real authentic. We're starting to work in other genres. Gary loves pop music. Gary's open-minded. When someone's good music is good music. But at the end of the day, Gary loves storytelling and Gary loves hip-hop. So over the past year and a half, I've been able to help put Gary in the room with the right artists at the right time, right before their albums come out, right before they become international hits, right before they have their big moments. And also, I've been able to help build those relationships into some partnerships with brands that VaynerMedia works with, Gary works with. I guess you could almost say friendships, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a strong word to use in my opinion, but you know, we're very honest and Gary means well.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes across. When you're in the room with him, it comes across very clear.
For sure. And you are one of the lucky individuals that is kind of one of his right-hand guys. Gets to spend a lot of time in the room with him, which, let's be honest, for a lot of people, that's a dream. And we're going to talk about Gary a little later in the interview, but I don't want to take the spotlight away from you because Gary is no stranger to attention. People know Gary. All have also given him a little introduction at the start of the show, so people have a little background on it. But I want to go into your story first, Mike. Why hip-hop? You mentioned you're doing music management on a broader scale now, but that's kind of where I feel like it got started for you. And what does hip-hop mean to you? Why was that the starting point?
You know, I'd be interested to know what you think about this, but I always tell people it's because part of it is because I'm from St. Louis. And I feel like the radio stations in St. Louis really played up Atlanta hip-hop, Atlanta local artists, St. Louis local artists, unlike other cities across the country, because I've tour managed 5 tours.
Okay.
And I've heard a lot of radio stations in St. Louis, Atlanta, Los Angeles. There's a few places that play the local artists and play like the regional hits. but not everywhere. And I think I was blessed, personally, to grow up in a city that was playing so much unknown art, hip-hop music that I fell in love with it.
I'm interested how you gravitated towards that, because I missed that boat when I was growing up in St. Louis.
Okay.
Well, no, not that I didn't. I just was unaware of it, and I wasn't actively seeking out because my genre of choice is more the rock and roll style, and it's coincidental that you're on the show right now because we are starting to have more music-oriented guests on the show. It just seems to be the trend recently, but how did you gravitate towards that?
My older brother.
Older brother? Siblings?
Ben Boyd. He was listening to hip-hop. You know, you do what your older brother, your older sisters are into.
Well, take us back to the start of the story. We know how we now have some background on how you got into it. How did you start getting into the management side? Or really, maybe, how did you start pursuing it as more of a career?
Yeah, so when I first moved to New York City, I was thinking about working at the record labels. I met Gary Vaynerchuk, started working with Gary Vaynerchuk, connecting the dots between him and artists. And then I took a break, and I worked at a different agency for a small period of time. And I never lost that passion for music. And I always thought to myself, I knew so many managers, and I met so many artists who went on to become great. I wonder if I could do it as well. And I always believed in myself, and I always thought I could be a manager. So I spoke to Gary about it. He believed in me as well. He's one of the people in my life who's always believed in me,
mm-hmm.
as far as the music stuff goes. And so we teamed up. I have a management company. Gary's involved. Mm-hmm. And I met Rome Fortune. And Rome asked me to be his manager. I was connecting dots for him in Atlanta. I was connecting dots for a few people, just getting the feel of what was going on in the city. And Rome asked me to be his manager. And I felt like it was a great fit. And we worked together for 3 years.
Do you have like a story behind that of how, you know, you mentioned you were connecting the dots, but any more specifics to kind of paint the picture of what that circumstance looked like?
Yeah, connecting the dots. So what I mean by that is I would go to Atlanta. I could get these independent artists on the radio stations because I knew the DJs. I was getting these independent artists in the room with bigger artists because I had known the artists and introduced them to Gary in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I was connecting the dots with producers on the come up. I was really A&Ring.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could say I was okay. A&Ring.
And for those that don't know what A&R is, can you give the definition behind that?
Yeah, artists and repertoire. It's really putting the right people together to make the best music possible.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, I have a feeling your connecting of the dots didn't start when you got to New York City. What were you doing, I mean, maybe extracurricularly before that to really make that happen? How are you starting to build those relationships?
I mean, in high school, you know, I was burning mixtapes, just like a lot of people, I think. Burning CDs, selling mixtapes at the Smet
mm-hmm.
in the hallway, you know, to all of our friends. And then in college, I was the Warner Music college rep for the whole city of Boston.
Cool.
So when artists came through, I brought them to the record store, helped put on events, private shows, put up the posters, did the stock checks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just really got in where I could, wherever I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me, you know, I guess I want to, I've got a question, and I want you to tell a couple stories, because you're managing Richie South right now, and you just mentioned that you managed Rome Fortune, which, you know, some people might be familiar with them, some people might not.
Right.
I guess that's kind of irrelevant. I mean, let's be honest, the work you do looks really glamorous on the surface. You get to travel to cool spots, you get to hang out with musicians, get to hang out with Gary Vaynerchuk and other influential individuals, but can you share something that no one understands or that people don't see about the work that you do?
One of the hardest parts of my job with management is that I'm managing a person, mm-hmm. you know, and no matter how hard you try to steer someone the right way, at the end of the day, it's their choice. You know, I can't physically control always what someone's doing, or even I wouldn't even want to. And so you could try your best, but at the end of the day, you're the manager, they're the artist, they're the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why managers get paid less, because there's less on the line, you know? Like when an artist really messes up big time, a lot of times the manager's career is not over. But, you know, sometimes the artist's career is over. So that's why the manager does get the smaller percentage. But I would say trying to control somebody and trying to work with somebody and putting in so much time, so much effort, so many long nights, and knowing that at the drop of a hat, you could be fired, you could watch everything fall apart just because someone else made a bad choice, you know? A lot of musicians, a lot of people in general get caught up with drugs or just the wrong crowd, and it's out of your control.
Yeah,
you could be doing everything right and still lose.
What's interesting there is it sounds like you're not necessarily connected to that artist to the extent that if they screw up, you're done. Like
you're
separate enough. Now there's a price to pay for it in that you're not getting as much of the take, but at the end of the day, you still have opportunities to bounce back, for lack of a better word, with a new client or a new, what would be the word for it?
Yeah, client. I would use the word client.
Okay. Now, maybe put that in the context, and you used a lot of, I guess, strong scenarios there, but put it in the context of the first individual that you managed. I saw you getting your start when you were managing Rome Fortune.
Right.
What did that 3 years look like?
Yeah, when I met Rome, we were really early days. We learned a lot. We were texting the fans. We were emailing the fans. We were talking with them. Very Gary Vee strategy,
mm-hmm.
communicating with the people who care. It ended up really paying off. We ended up getting a lot of our shows from people who cared. Our community of fans were mm-hmm. turned out to be the kids who were booking shows at their local schools. So the community of fans turned out to be kids who were in the scene or trying to make a name for themselves. So they aligned themselves with us because we were so open to the conversation of meeting them.
Yeah.
So that led us to different shows around the Southeast. And we built it from there to going on 5 tours. Rome performed at Pitchfork Paris Festival.
Oh, wow.
That was one of the highlights, in my opinion. He worked with Toro y Moi. He worked with Quartet.
Yep.
He worked with Gucci Mane. We accomplished a lot. We put out an album with Fool's Gold Records. His album cover was on the Times Square big screen. We accomplished a lot, and we started off not even being able to get booked for a show,
Mm-hmm.
So built it from the ground up. He had a good buzz when I met him, but it was early days. I say good buzz because I'm so in love with the startup story.
Yeah.
I saw the potential, but I say good buzz, but we couldn't even get a show,
Yeah. I want to go back to the glamour a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I haven't necessarily heard a low point from you yet. Like, you mentioned some of the initial struggles that I could imagine from starting up from the grassroots. What's something that people don't necessarily see, whether it's the hours you're putting in, the type of work you're putting in, maybe even the personalities that you're working with?
Yeah.
It's a challenge that most people don't see from the outside.
Well, here's a story. So when we started out, we didn't have a booking agent.
Mm-hmm.
Booking agents are pretty great because mm-hmm. they vet the show opportunities in addition to bringing them in. And so we thought we were being booked for a college in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
But really, it was like a block party.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in the best neighborhood. We could tell right when we showed up.
Yeah.
A lot of people had visible guns.
Yeah.
And everything was going okay. It was one of the only times in my life where I kind of got a bad feeling.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was, I didn't know what to do. I didn't say, I might have told Rome, hey, be careful.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was one of the maybe 3 times in my life I got a weird feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And when Rome was on stage, someone pulled out a gun and just started shooting. No one got shot, but everyone ran.
Yeah.
You could have almost got trampled.
Yeah.
Then they got the police, they got the dogs, they got the helicopters, but we hadn't gotten paid yet. There's an after party at the nightclub,
mm-hmm.
and that's when we were supposed to do this block party and the nightclub.
So yeah.
And I told Rome, I was like, let's just do the nightclub. We drove, I think, 9. I drove myself. I was the only person with a driver's license. I drove 9 hours.
Yeah.
I believe it was 9 hours from Atlanta, Georgia to Columbus, Ohio, however long that is.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed. We did the nightclub party. It didn't seem like the safest environment when we walked in. And right before Rome got on the stage at the nightclub, another shooting happened.
At the nightclub.
In fact, what happened was the security guard told the DJ to stop the music. They told us all to leave. We're all leaving the venue, about to walk out the doors, and someone in the parking lot starts shooting. So what happened then was I actually had my feet in an awkward position. So when everyone rushed back inside because they were shooting in the parking lot, I got knocked to the floor probably 3 or 4 times.
Oh.
Luckily, I was able to get up, but my legs were covered in bruises. I hid behind a concrete pillar.
Yeah.
Until the shooting stopped. And then we went back to one of the guys who booked us his house. It was, again, another bad situation. But I told the guy, you know, we needed our money.
You were 0 for 2 that night, and you're like, I'm going to go to a house, and we're going to see. You didn't think of throwing in the towel after the first one or the second one?
We still needed to get our money.
I guess this is a testament to your persistence, but damn, man.
Oh, man.
Life over money?
And so it was a bad situation, to say the least, but told the guy we needed our money. He said he didn't have it. And so I told the guy a couple more times we needed our money, and he was a pretty big guy. Looked like he probably played college football, and I'm not the biggest guy.
Yeah, no, you're not. Like, that's clear.
So eventually he went upstairs, came downstairs. I think they booked us for $1,000. I think he gave me like $940, and I told him, that's totally fine. You know, like,
I was wondering if you were going to challenge that.
No, no, I think he thought I was going to challenge it, but no, I had had enough. Yeah. And he handed me the cash in front of everyone in the room. And then, he told me, he goes, you know, feel free to sleep here on the floor. And I, after everyone in the room had seen me get almost $1,000 cash, and after everything that had happened all night, and I believe there was someone who was heavily on drugs who also did not belong in the room. So I told everyone, you know, we're fine. I drove back. I drove back that night. So drove back from Columbus to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I stopped at a rest stop to sleep in the car for maybe an hour on the way home, just because it's such a long drive.
Well, I'm glad you're here to do this podcast. That sounds like you had 3 close calls. Can I ask what you learned from that?
Yeah. What did I learn from that? I mean, I learned the value of a booking agent. A booking agent won't let you get in those situations. They really do the background check. I also learned that, you know, life is wild, man. Like, life is precious. It's crazy. But a lot of people go through similar situations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things we did that show. And then when we did get a booking agent, we didn't really tell people there was a shootout at our shows because no one wants to book you when people are getting shot at your shows.
Right. Yeah. Right. That makes sense. On that note, I'm going to talk about the next beers in front of me because we're gonna bring this back up after that surprising story. I just finished off the blonde. I specifically requested I'm drinking a flight right now, by the way, for those listening that are curious. And they come on a skateboard, which is pretty cool, like a really small mini skateboard that they're tucked into little divots along it. So I'm drinking 4 beers right now. It is hot as hell in New York and New Jersey today. So I told the bartender I needed something crushable. So the blonde was his choice. And now moving on to a Belgian triple, which I forget the name. It's Philo something.
Velociraptor.
Velociraptor. That's it. I was about to say Philososaurus Rex. I'm like, that is 100% not right because that does not have alliteration to it. So I'm going to take a quick sip. Definitely Belgian. Definitely thick. Definitely not the perfect pairing for this weather, but flavorful. Getting some of that signature banana taste from the yeast. And I'm done talking about the beer now. I want to talk about your current project, Richie South.
Yeah, Richie.
Well, how do you come into the picture? What's the story behind that?
I met Richie one night. Me and Rome were at Siege. He's a producer in Atlanta. We were at Siege's house, who also had Villa over. And Richie was just sitting there. And Richie wasn't very popular at the time, but he struck me as someone who was really honest and humble.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice guy. And so I remember the night we left, I told Rome, I said, hey, that guy's going to be something special.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's rare to meet people that are as nice and genuine as Richie South.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I believe in people like that. I believe in people like that in the music industry.
What are the main things you look for? You mentioned nice. You mentioned humble. I'm serious. What are some other things you look for? Because I think a common theme we have, whether we're talking to an entrepreneur on this show, whether we're talking to someone that's involved in the music scene, is the type of things they look for in the talent that they see potential in. I'm curious, what is that for you from a music perspective?
He taught himself how to play the piano. So the talent's there, you know? It's real emotional. The music is real emotional. There's a lot of room for growth. You know, Richie will play a beat, and the artist will want to jump right on it.
Yeah.
It's never like, oh, play another one. Or if they do play another one, the artist will be like, okay, I'll take all of the ones you played. So, like, the talent is there. But the reason I bring up how humble he was and how nice he was, you know, maybe it goes back to those stories that I mentioned earlier and Even the story of the show with the shooting, it's like, if you're going to do something like this and you're going to be that invested in somebody, in my opinion, for me personally, it's good for me to be around people I enjoy being around. You know?
Oh, 100%.
I don't want to be around somebody who's a jerk. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be around somebody who's going to destroy my relationships or destroy their own relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who's humble and willing to grind and work it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they say it in tech all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm around Gary and I'm around a lot of tech people, is you bet on the person. You don't just bet on the company, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, I'm making my bets on these individuals.
Yeah. You're looking at their overall character. And that includes the talent. That includes how they carry themselves. Do you think humility correlates directly with hard work? Because you suggested that a little bit. Or at least that's what I heard. I'm curious on your perspective on that.
If a humble person is working hard, I think they're going to continue working hard longer than someone who doesn't have humility.
Sure.
You know? Because Richie is killing it right now, and he's still making 10, 12 beats a day.
Yeah.
And when I say killing it, a lot of people listening don't even know who he is, you know?
Yeah.
But we're working with Future and Young Thug and 21 Savage and Chris Brown and a bunch of these big names.
Those are big names.
and we're working with local people, too, who are future big names and or will be big names in the near future. So, you know, we just found out last night that we're going to be in a movie coming up soon, Superfly, and then we were just on Silicon Valley, the show Atlanta. We've been on it twice.
Okay.
Love and Hip Hop, like.
And when you say we're on it, you're talking like his tracks.
His tracks.
Cool. You know, we've dropped Gary's name a couple times. Let's transition to that. And I want to hear who Gary is in your words, too, because there are probably a lot of people listening to this that do know who Gary Vaynerchuk is.
Yeah.
And it would be good to hear it from someone's perspective that gets to spend a lot of time around him. But there are probably some people that also have no context on who he is, because he is the basis of my next question.
Okay. Well, for people who do know who he is, I would say that in addition to whatever their opinion is, I feel like Gary's a genius. Gary has a huge heart. I say it all the time behind closed doors. I say it in front of Gary's face.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gary has a huge heart, and I think his empathy and his ability to feel for people and really connect with people goes a long way. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know who he is, he's an angel investor. He owns VaynerMedia with his brother AJ. They both are co-CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
They started it together.
He's a family guy. He's a family business guy.
Oh, yeah.
From the get-go, Wine Library was part of his dad's wine business for years and years and years.
Yeah, if you go all the way back, he helped his dad take his business, I think, from, what was it, like 3 to 60 million or something?
It was something big like that, yeah.
And he was one of the first people to really blow up off YouTube vlogging.
Mm-hmm.
He's a personality.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I mean, right now he's mostly focused on, like, agency work with VaynerMedia, and that seems to be, you know, whenever he's doing something related to sports or related to hip-hop, it's a lot about ad agency work and social media as well. That's probably where people know him the most, is he is just a constant force on all platforms across social media, and also has a pretty good pulse on where those things are going. Now, you know... You talked a little bit about this, but what's the story behind how you initially got connected with Gary, and like, how does hip hop management fit into his overall vision of being a brand builder and the leader of a multifaceted media agency?
Yeah, so I first got connected to Gary through his brother AJ. I met AJ in college.
Mm.
I was all about music at the time. And I was telling AJ some artists that I believed were going to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
And AJ was all about building websites. And so we teamed up. We started making money off Google AdWords. We made $8,000 in a month off Google AdWords at the time.
Nice.
2005.
Whew.
And I told him a bunch of these artists. And then one day when I saw the money we were making and I saw everything going on, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to go on MySpace and I'm just going to go to Atlanta. Because you used to be able to separate it, filter it by city.
Yeah.
And I just went down the line, and I was like, I'm going to find someone who's going to be famous.
Yeah.
And so I clicked next page, next page, next page. Eventually, I found Soulja Boy. I reached out to Soulja Boy. I believe I did Soulja Boy's first interview.
All right.
And I told AJ, I said, hey, tell your brother Soulja Boy is going to be famous, you know?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do with that information, you know? I'm not a big shot. I wasn't on their level. I wasn't doing the stuff that Gary was doing at the time, but I was like, you know, this kid's going to be famous. I was telling everyone. I was making a bet. I was believing in myself, betting on myself. And 2-3 years later, Soulja Boy came out with his hit, Crank That Soulja Boy.
Yeah,
and
no, I remember that.
Gary was driving down the street, AJ freaked out. Gary pulled over, and they called me. I was home for Christmas break from college. They called me, and they're like, you were right. That kid that you picked, he blew up. Wow, I can't believe it. So when I moved to New York City, Gary had remembered that little story. Like I said earlier, I moved here to work for the record labels, but Gary tweeted, if you're a real hustler, let me know. If you're really about that hustle life, like, I'm looking to hire, whatever, whatever. I told AJ, I said, hey, I want to meet your brother.
This was like 2009, right?
2009.
Yeah.
I want to meet your brother. I'm really about that hustle life. And, you know, I really, at the very least, I wanted to get a photo with Gary for my Twitter avatar.
Of course.
And so.
In fact, that's still what it's about for so many people. I was going to say that's what it was about back in the day, but, you know.
2009, it was crazy.
And yeah.
When I met Gary, he hired me on the spot.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. What was the second part of the question? Why does Gary care about hip-hop?
That is part one of the questions. Second part is, why is hip-hop such a big part of, you know, what he's doing now? Because you mentioned he's interested in it, but just because he's interested in it, he must see something in it, too, and it must represent for him to be this, I don't want to say fanatical about it, but, you know, knowing Gary, that's probably appropriate.
I mean, it's right place, right time, right person, you know? Like, Gary loves hip-hop. Hip-hop is, I believe, the most popular music in the country.
Yeah.
If you do know who Gary is, you know he talks about attention all the time. Go where the attention is.
Mm-hmm.
So we lucked out, you know? No one has more eyeballs on them than the hip-hop artists right now in the music community. Mm-hmm. Like, not really. And then hip-hop artists blow up so fast sometimes. Like, yes, everyone, it takes years and years and years, but you get the right song. After your 5 years of work, you get the right song. You go from 0 to 100 in a month.
Mm-hmm.
So being around the right artist at the right time, and then Gary's message and how entrepreneurial he is, how bootstrappy he is, how he'll get in your face, how he's not afraid to curse.
Mm-hmm.
It really resonates with the hip hop community and the people who love hip hop music, because it kind of sounds similar to what they're listening to.
Yeah. Right now, one of the big things you're doing with Gary is the Monday to Monday playlist. I shouldn't say one of the big things or biggest things, but it's one of the most forward-facing things you're doing. Where did the Monday to Monday playlist come from, and how does it relate back to some of that hustle element that we've been talking about?
Yeah, so the name itself, very hustle-forward, Monday to Monday. Saba was one of the first artists. He's from Chicago. He was one of the first artists to mention Gary in a song.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pronounced Saba. It's like short for sabotage. But or that's how you would pronounce it. But anyway, he mentioned Gary in a song. The song name is Monday to Monday. I believe when we were thinking about putting together a playlist name, I think I was the person who was like, oh, let's call it Monday to Monday. And
yeah.
Just because, you know, we're updating it every Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's hustle music. Gary's fans are hustlers, you know.
It's about not living for the weekend, essentially.
It's so in tune with Gary's. Gary's message.
Yep.
And then the music, I would say that the playlist is interesting for a lot of reasons. We're able to give plays to independent artists who need them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an independent artist and you can't get on the big Spotify playlist, you could get on my playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And I could give you 5-10,000 plays on one of your songs, and then you could go to your label meeting, or you could go maybe do a show locally or get some new fans, you know, giving people that opportunity. But then also, like, someone like 21 Savage, he's never met Gary face-to-face. They text. They know each other. We've tried to make it happen. It's fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first got onto 21 Savage's music very early on, I didn't have the playlist. One thing the playlist is allowed me to do is start conversations with artists early on, and bring him into Gary's world. So by the time they do finally meet, there's a lot of context there, and we've already paid it forward, and we've already done something. We've already showed them love. We've already given them plays. So every week I pick 15 tracks along with Gary. I'll tell you how it works. Like, I pick the 15 tracks. If Gary's really feeling a song throughout the week, he normally tweets about it, Instagram stories about it. So then I'll throw that in there, because I want to make it as authentic to what Gary's listened to as possible. Normally, I'll pick around 15 tracks myself, give them to Gary, explain why I picked the track, who the artist is, why I picked that artist,
mm-hmm.
and then he looks over it, and he's like, okay, maybe take this one out, take that one out, add this song, add this throwback song. A lot of the throwback songs are his, like this week is the Beach Boys. But the funniest part, and the reason we started this, is because we've been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Gary always wanted me to give him the hot new music so he could listen to it. Because he actually really does care and he does listen to the music. Yeah. So it's just a public facing version of what we've been doing for years.
Sure.
Behind the scenes.
That makes sense. I've got some questions related to that, but we're going to get into the details of the music in the next round because my glasses are empty. Yours is almost empty. So for those of you listening, we're going to grab round two. We will be right back to talk some music and get to know a little bit more about Mike Boyd here in a second. I'm back to the basic. I ain't racist. I fuck on all races. But I see you going places. Hopping and running races. That's calamari, I taste it. I'm at the Ari in Vegas. I keep it so real, I can't fake it. I've been sipping that lean, got me lazy.
Hey.
Is that like a signature thing of yours? I feel like I've seen that before.
I've done it a lot, yeah.
Good.
Also, good. Oh my God.
Really? I have not heard. Maybe I've heard that one. It's been
I used a while. To do it. I haven't been doing it lately.
I haven't made any real references to high school yet. I'll be honest, though. One of the things that was in my head the whole time I was preparing for this was, I remember at cross-country practice when Mike would wear that fucking knockoff Ray Lewis jersey, which, for those of you that are listening, that was not an actual jersey. I did air quotes for that. It was like a t-shirt that had like Ray Lewis and his number written on the back. That was literally, as I was coming up with every thoughtful question, I'm like, Mike wore that ridiculous Ray Lewis jersey. Mike wore that ridiculous Ray Lewis jersey. What was the inspiration behind that? I want to ask that question.
Okay. I guess the best answer for that is, you remember, I mean, it was around the time that he was on the cover of Madden.
Okay.
Let's just leave it at that. He was popular.
Yeah, mid-2000s.
It was high school, you know. We were all running track and cross country. Everyone's goofy. It was just a t-shirt. I needed a t-shirt to work out in. I wrote 52 on it. You know?
Yeah. I remember our coach asked us one day, he's like, man, where'd you get that shirt? You're like, I bought it.
I also remember he told me I could no longer wear it.
Why?
I don't know. He banned it.
All right.
Cross-country days were hard.
Good. Well, you were... Man, I don't know what you were. That was the running gag that I remember the most as I was getting ready for this. Because these are meant to be somewhat serious interviews. They usually get a little silly towards this part of the interview, but I could not get that moment out of my head. And I just want to kick off. We usually do like a drinking story right at the start of this, but I had a question that I was just thinking of as I was in line getting our next beer, which, by the way, we need to talk about our next beer first. You are drinking the Philososaurus Rex, Velociraptor, sorry.
Hey, thank
that,
you.
That I could not remember the name of during the last round.
Right.
I also finished with a playoff beard pale ale. I totally forgot to mention that. I've moved on to the good BIPA. Like, just they've combined BI and IPA in the same one because I want something refreshing and hoppy, because, again, it's uncharacteristically hot. One thing I was just so curious about as I was in line was, what is one thing that you've learned from all your time, whether it's surrounded by hip-hop artists or Gary Vaynerchuk or all these other influencers that you get to spend more time with than, I'd say, the normal person, that you've learned that you would not have otherwise?
Well, I'd say the best thing I've ever learned from Gary Vaynerchuk, the best advice he gave me was to be the bigger person.
Okay.
Early on in my professional career after college, my working career, I was in a situation where I was lied to and misled and treated unfairly, in my opinion. And I was really angry about that. And I talked to Gary about it. Mm-hmm. He told me to be the bigger person. He told me to always be the bigger person.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgave the people who mistreated me. And to this day, they're actually my friends.
Yeah.
And to this day, I've actually done some of the biggest deals of my life with them.
Cool.
And that's why earlier in the podcast, I said that it's hard for me to use the word friend.
Yeah.
It's a tough word.
Why is that?
Because I feel like people use it too loosely.
I agree with that, especially in the Facebook world where you can have up to 5,000 friends.
Oh, yeah.
Which no one can really have 5,000 friends.
Right. No, yeah, the person who took advantage of me early on in my career, I recently asked them, because I always thought they were my friend early on in my working career. I recently asked them, I said, you know, when I moved to New York City and I didn't have a lot of friends and I was fresh out of St. Louis and fresh out of college, I told them that, you know, that I always viewed them as a friend. And whether it was true or not, it meant a lot to me. And the person told me straight to my face, they're never my friend.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, that's just the music industry. And I said, You know, I was shocked that they said that, but that's just how it is, man.
That leads me into another question. I figured this was going to bring up a sidebar discussion, but we're drinking beer. That's kind of the point. We can go any direction we want. How do you handle that aspect about the music industry? Because my only experience with it, aside from people I've talked to on this show, is like playing in cover bands and whatnot. And I just saw how big of divas people could be just through that. And it's like, dude, you're in a weekend cover band. Like, get over yourself. Like, how do you manage some of the personalities and the egos that go into it? It sounds like the people you typically work with, you know, the people you gravitate to and work with, don't have those type of egos. But how do you filter that out in an industry that probably caters to that in a lot of ways, or caters to those type of personalities?
How do I deal with it? Don't take things personally. Yeah. I know who I am, you know. I know I believe in myself and I bet on myself. So, you know, I'm also a really nice guy. And I'm just you know, that's
cheers
that's,
to that.
That's
we never clink glasses for this round. Hey. That's a good one for that.
I'm a nice guy, you know. I'm not really in it to screw people over.
Yeah.
I'm not in it to fake around with friendships.
Well, I have some unique context on your attitude towards all of it, because I've known you since high school.
Yeah.
And I knew, like, you do the hip-hop thing because you've always fucking loved it. The same way a lot of people have always liked a genre of music. What's awesome about what you've done is you capitalized on what you love, despite the fact that that's not necessarily the mainstream or the safe route to take. And I think as a result of that, in a lot of ways, you found yourself in a position where you're surrounded by a lot of pretty ambitious go-getters in your career and your life, I'll call it. So now it's time for a drinking story, or maybe not a drinking story. You've been on enough interesting trips and experiences. You already told one earlier regarding your misadventures in Columbus. But, you know, we're on round two. What's something that's adventurous and maybe a little fun to kick us off?
You know what's funny? I was thinking before I came here, I have so many stories and I don't... I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
Get to know me. Okay, so I believed in Young Thug very early on.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Atlanta.
Yeah.
I met Young Thug. I went straight up to him and I said, hey, you know, you're going to be a star. I believe I'm 100% in, like, whatever, whatever. I told him, I said, this is my video guy. I was managing a video director at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him a music video, and I said, this is his work. We'd love to shoot a video for you right now. Like, let's do it now.
Yeah.
And Thug was like, all right, he was with it. He was 100% with it. Because a lot of times artists don't know how popular they are. You know, I'm early. It's a combination of it all. But, like, he was flattered. I followed him on the highway. We drove to the trap house where there's a lot of guns and drugs and all that different types of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we shot a music video. And at the time, it was the biggest music video in his career. So we shot the music video that night. It took 40 minutes to shoot the music video. It was a little dangerous situation just because of all the guns and drugs. But but we did the video. And I knew it, because I knew that if I got in there early with Young Thug, he'd always remember me. And to this day, he still remembers me when he sees me, if I bring it up, or he'll remember that I was there before most people were there. I was there before a lot of people who we can't trust were there.
Because you've got some unique context to your relationship.
Yeah.
And also did something to serve him in a lot of ways, too.
Like, yeah, I uploaded the video to his YouTube, I believe.
Yeah.
He gave me the password. I logged into his Gmail.
You had Young Thug's YouTube Gmail password? All right.
I was in his email doing all that. But I don't know. I won't say too much, but the next day we went back to, like, review the content, and everyone was watching the video. You know, in the trap house, everyone has their automatic assault rifles and everything like that.
I didn't know that, but I'll just assume that. And you're in this world. I'm not.
I will say that I was in the back of the room. Everyone was crowded around the computer watching the video, and, you know, people had their hands behind their backs watching the video, and, like, when there was a good moment, everyone got excited and was like, oh, or oh man, or whatever, and, like, kind of jumped up.
Yeah.
And the guy in front of me had his hands behind his back, and he had his assault rifle pointed at my legs. And so every time the music video got exciting, he kind of jumped up or kind of was like, oh man, or oh man, like, I just got my cameo. And I was just thinking to myself, please don't blow my legs off.
I've never had all of someone's stories involve guns like this before.
Please don't blow my legs off, because, you know, That wouldn't have ended well. So
no, not at all.
But yeah. But the funny part is that I'm the type of person who I was taking those risks, you know. Because I was betting on myself, I was betting on my gut.
Yeah.
And now it pays off because now Young Thug's on top of his game. He's working with my producer. We remember each other and it paid off.
I've got a question that segues pretty well to this, I think, or from that, I should say. We're having this conversation spring, summer, 2018. What are some artists right now that you're just really digging that no one knows about that you're putting your bets on right now? Let's have a little hip-hop talk and why these people are important. Maybe pick 2 to 3.
Okay. When you say no one knows about them, I'm just going to pick people who I think most people don't know about.
Yeah.
In order for me to really believe in someone, they have to have some type of momentum.
That's fair.
But I say Tierra Whack.
Okay.
She's from Philadelphia.
Okay.
She's very artistic. She's very creative. Her music videos are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I just believe in her 150%.
Yeah.
Like, will it happen in 6 months? Will it happen in 2 years? I don't know. But sure. Will it happen? I would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay.
Very, very hard yes on that one. Gunna, he's from Atlanta. He's with Young Thug.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The reason I believe in Gunna is because the music, the melodies, the lyrics, like, it's all there. So
yeah.
Much so that I just can't see a scenario where he doesn't stick around for the long term. It's similar to Future in the idea that you might not like Future's music, but he's such a good songwriter, in my opinion. He puts his heart on his sleeve that he's always going to... Well, Future's going to have a long career.
Yeah.
It's 2018. He's not going away.
Mm-hmm.
Third person? You know, for the third person, listen to the Monday to Monday playlist. I put him on there. I put everybody on the playlist.
I'll throw one out there. I'm going to need your help, though, since I told you I was doing my research before I came out here, and you know me. I'm more of a rock and roll pop punk guy, but I could not stop listening to Money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the track that just hooked me. I like the lyrics. Like, I'm a Thunder fan, so there was that Kobe Russell line in there.
There
were some basketball references. It was one of those very outwardly hustle, work hard type songs, and I loved the beat, man. There was like some swagger to it. Like, I felt like I was walking differently down through Times Square.
Oh,
as I was listening to that.
Yeah, beat's part of the reason why I picked that song for sure.
Yeah, who is that, by the way?
I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but that's Lei Kelei 47.
Okay.
Leikelei 47.
Some of these things are hard to pronounce, like South, you know? I thought it was Souf.
Yeah, you know, I have met her. I met her one time backstage at a show.
Yep.
But I've never said her name out loud before, so that's my debut of saying her name, and I don't know if I said it right, but she's great. Right?
Yeah.
She's great. That's why she's on the playlist.
It was an awesome tune. I mean, I was digging it. That's why I literally listened to it about 4 times before I showed up to this interview. So for those of you listening, I will have links to all of those artists and songs Mike just named in the show notes. And more specifically, I will have links to the Monday to Monday playlist. I would definitely subscribe to that if you've got Spotify. Updated every Monday, curated by Mike. Passed through Gary V before hitting the presses, so it is a cool list, and you'll be listening along to it with, at this point in time, around 60,000 of your hip-hop loving friends as well, too. Another question that popped into my mind, because we were just talking about it with that song, like hustle culture and like entrepreneurship. That's a big thing right now. I hate to say it, but it's kind of a trend, too.
Okay.
What's something you love about it? What's something you hate about it? Give me both sides of the coin.
Hustle culture?
Yeah.
I love that anything is possible.
Yep.
You know, like, for example, my girlfriend is an immigrant. She's from South America, and she's one of the more successful people I know. You know
awesome.
What I mean? Like, immigrated to the United States and is just killing it. I think that life is hard. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things that are out of our control, but if you work hard, you got a shot. You know what I mean? And I think entrepreneurship really helps a lot of people change their lives.
Yeah.
What I don't like about it, I think that Gary talks a lot about how he sleeps a lot these days.
Yeah.
And he's been getting a lot of good sleep.
Yeah.
And he also works out a lot.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people think you got to sacrifice sleep and you got to sacrifice health, but you really don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when people get into the mindset of hustle, 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 work 24/7, I never take a break, that's the wrong way to look at it.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Do you think there's an element of culture Do you think there's an element of hustle culture where people are just kind of indulging in, like, hustle porn and, like, looking at these people working hard all day but not doing anything about it?
Yeah. I think people... There's people every day watching Gary's videos who are just sitting on their couch not doing anything.
Yeah.
But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. It's entertainment, you
That's
know?
Interesting. Yeah, I guess it is entertainment. I would disagree. I feel like there is something wrong with that. I feel like
really?
If that's what you're indulging in, you should get off your ass and do something. That's my opinion.
That's the goal. The goal is to inspire you to get off your butt and stop watching and to go do. You know, Gary says it a lot. He's always like, I'm not trying to get the most views. I'm trying to inspire the most people to go do the most things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, if you like horror movies, if you like... Whatever you're into, but since hustle is so popular right now, a lot of people are just into it. It's the genre they're into.
Yeah.
They might watch a movie about entrepreneurs before they watch a movie about Jason and Michael Myers, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. There's an entertainment element to it for sure right now, and there's a lot of people that are catering to that. So I just hope a lot of people capitalize on it, because there are some cool things you can do if you just, like, get to work and stop watching people that are just getting to work. We're two people that are getting to work right now, both outside of the brewery and inside of the brewery. We're about halfway through this round. We're getting to the rapid fire round where I ask some quicker questions to get some quicker answers from you, but feel free to take your time with these. First question that I've got is, you travel around quite a bit. This show has a bit of a travel element to it. What's one spot where the nightlife or the culture just sticks out to you?
Atlanta. I love Atlanta.
I was going to ask you about Atlanta anyway, but I was hoping that was going to be your answer, because you've talked about it a couple times. What's special about Atlanta? You've been gravitating to that spot for years.
It's very accepting. Mm-hmm. It's very open. It's very friendly. To me, Atlanta is St. Louis, but a lot more fun.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of home.
Okay.
I love hip-hop, you know? Atlanta is the hip-hop capital right now.
What's unique about Atlanta hip-hop, out of curiosity? What differentiates it from East Coast, West Coast, Houston?
Well, one thing that I'll say about Atlanta hip-hop is that the way it's created. So a lot of times when you're in the studio in Atlanta, you might not even like an artist, but you can collab with them because it's very friendly competition.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in the studio in Atlanta, like, let's say I'm a rapper. Let's say I'm a famous rapper. And let's say you walk in the room.
Yeah.
And I see you there, and I'm like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, let me hear some of your stuff, and then I like it. I'm like, all right, how about you jump on this song?
Yeah.
It might come out, it might never come out, because people in Atlanta basically live in the studio, so they're recording all the time. But when I get you on the song, it might come out, and then you might be the next famous rapper.
Yeah.
Whereas in New York, I believe that one aspect of why that doesn't happen as much is it costs so much to live here.
Mm-hmm.
It costs a lot to book studio time. I think sometimes in a place like New York, you know, you go in, you record your song, and you leave.
It's
in Atlanta,
how that kind of hinders the arts in a lot of ways, where you get that natural synergy by just people hanging out in Atlanta in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, everyone's just hanging out. You know, also, I think in Atlanta more... These are all just my personal experiences.
Oh, for sure. Well, that's what we're looking
for. In Atlanta, like... It's always been more of like a you come with your friends vibe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In LA, it was more, for me, it was always more professional. It was always more like you're in the room because you're a good songwriter or you're a good producer.
Yeah.
Or you really are a famous person. In Atlanta, it was always just kind of like, oh, you're a friend. You grew up with us. You are a nice person. You're just someone we want to have around. You're in. You know?
Yeah.
There's no reason for me to be in the studio with Young Thug as much as I've been. There's no reason for me. You know, I didn't grow up with him. I wasn't working with him. But when you're in the studio, like, no one's asking you to leave. Like, it's a very open community, like, collaborative world, Atlanta.
Yeah. You know, you get to spend time with rappers in different cities. You get to spend time with influencers. You get to spend time with Gary Vee and his whole crew. Who's someone, if you could grab a drink with anyone, who would it be and why?
The number one person I want to meet is Seth Godin.
Yeah?
Number one person.
Yep.
I read his emails every day.
Gary hasn't made that happen for you yet?
I never asked him to.
Okay. All right.
But,
Gary, if you're listening to this, which you're probably not, hook Mike up, man. He's been doing a ton for you for almost a decade now.
Well, whether I meet him or not, no big deal. Mm-hmm. But he would be the number one person I would want to meet. Number two is Gucci Mane. I've never met Gucci Mane. But I think those guys would be interesting. I'd love to have a
By the way, for those of you listening that don't know Seth Godin, really prominent business blogger, how would you describe him?
Genius. Motivational genius. I mean, I think Seth, when he writes his emails, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in life, you're able to read. Do you read his email every morning?
I don't actually read his emails, but for to provide some context to that, too, like, for those of you listening that don't know him, he writes, like, really quick. I mean, his books are in this format, too, like, really quick, to-the-point lessons, essentially.
Yeah. And so I think no matter who you are, no matter where you are in life, no matter what you're trying to accomplish, you could take from his anecdotes, his emails, and you could apply them to your life. And I think he's one of the very few people who's providing that value on a daily basis. And he's helped me out a lot. And we don't even know each other, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, your buddy Gary Vee talks about that quite a bit in terms of mentorship, where he gets hundreds of emails a day, people being like, oh, will you be my mentor? He's like, dude, I'm giving you all my content already for free on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. Like, just go wherever. I'm giving away so much of the advice I'd give if I were one-on-one with you right now.
That's real.
we were just kind of referencing Gary here. What's a quirk, if you can share, of Gary's that only someone that gets to spend as much time as you do with him would know?
He's always working.
Yeah.
Always. It's not a joke.
It's not a facade. Yeah.
I mean, unless he's with his family or his kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And unless he's talking to you.
Yeah.
But he's really, he really does his social media. It's not someone else. It's not like, that's really him tweeting at you. That's really him DMing you. That's really him liking your stuff. That's really him commenting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a joke. I've asked. I've said, hey, can I like use your Instagram account to DM someone?
Yeah.
The answer is no.
It's just
straight
awesome.
Up no.
That's
because,
great.
Because he keeps it 100% authentic.
Yeah.
You know? It could be life or death, and he'd be like, I'm sorry. It's like, he keeps it 100% authentic. It's no joke.
That's awesome. All right, last question before we do some wrap-up stuff. I've asked you a lot of questions today, Mike. What's one thing you wish I would have asked you?
You know what? I'll give you an answer that people have asked me recently that I've been talking about a lot. Is people ask me, why do I think I'm good at picking artists, or why do I think I've had success rates above average? Because I'm not perfect. You know, I've picked artists who haven't succeeded. But I like to tell people that, you know, I'm from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Boston University. I live in New York. I mostly listen to Atlanta music. I'm a middle child. Like, I've always just been right in the middle of so many different cultures. I didn't live anywhere for 2.5 years. I was couch surfing. I was living with different families. I've seen so many different people.
Yeah.
I've been to so many different cities. I've been in, like, scenarios where I'm the richest person in the room, where I'm the poorest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been around so many different people that I believe that part of my success in picking these artists that middle America mess with and that have longevity is because I've just been around so many people that I'm able to know what a good amount of people are going to like.
Yeah, you've got variety, man. Grew up in the Midwest, went to college out east, lived up in the Northeast, spent a lot of time in the Southeast down in Atlanta. That's a good variety right there.
Yeah, my grandpa's from Mexico. My grandma's from Ireland. You know what I mean? Like, just different variety has just helped me to find these artists and see what people are going to like.
Love it. Well, we're wrapping things up here. What is next for Mike Boyd?
More work. I am going to build the Monday to Monday playlist. It's going to be as big as possible, man. We're about to break 60,000. I want to break 100,000. I want to break 1 million. But what's next for me is hard work and life balance, you know?
Yeah.
I want to keep my resume growing, but I also want to be healthy. I want to have a family. I want to be the best person I could be. My producer just got a gold plaque. So
that's awesome.
That's one goal of mine that just got crossed.
I wanted to ask you, we talked about this a bit outside of it, but what's your secret to work-life balance? Not a secret, but what's one piece of advice you'd give on it?
Just do it.
Just do it? Make it happen?
Just do it no matter what.
That's good.
Because at the end of the day, your email is always going to be there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing as if you ask somebody, like, how do you work out? It's like, I just get up early and work out.
Yeah. Put it on the calendar. Make it a habit.
Yeah, once you start doing good habits, it affects your life. And I think once you start doing a good work-life balance, it affects the rest of your life. And then when you are at work, you make it count more.
Yeah.
When you're not doing a work-life balance, you might not be realizing it, but you might not be making it count when you're on the clock.
Yeah, good answer. We're hanging out here in Jersey City right now. It's ironic that our first New York area Pubcast is not actually in New York itself, but if you had 2 to 3 spots you'd recommend people check out, whether it's drinking breweries or restaurants in the area, what would they be?
Jersey City?
Jersey City or New York. Pick your poison.
Okay. Raza. It's a pizza place in New York. I mean, in Jersey City. But I don't know what it was. It was New York Times or New York Magazine. Someone just said it's the best pizza in New York is in Jersey City.
Damn.
And after that review, the line is around the block.
That'll do that.
That place is amazing. Taqueria is amazing. That's in Jersey City.
Okay.
Departed Souls. This place, the beer's great. The games are great. You could order food. They deliver to this place. I love this place.
Speaking of games, I'm shocked no one jumped on that.
I'm very shocked.
That is like the pure recipe for a pubcast. If you sit down next to the pool table, next to the jukebox, next to the giant Connect 4 game, someone is going to jump on that right away. So we lucked out today. Last thing, Mike, what's the best way to connect with you?
Instagram direct message.
Instagram direct message at Mike Boyd Jr., correct?
Yep. Mike Boyd Jr. Yep.
Also, don't forget to subscribe to the Monday to Monday playlist. We're going to get you to that 100,000, then that million. hopefully, you know, by the time this episode comes out. So we'll see where it's at that point. With that, Mike, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Hey.
And for those of you listening, we will catch you at the next bar, next brewery, next time.
Hey, thanks for listening. That was Drippin' by Gunna. If you recall, Mike mentioned Gunna during the episode as an Atlanta rapper that he expected to rise, and he did in between when we recorded this episode and its release here in October 2018. So kudos, Mike, on your ongoing ability to pick out musical talent. And if you want to hear more from Gunna, give a follow on Instagram or listen to him wherever you get your music. Either way, that's Gunna, G-U-N-N-A. If you liked what you heard, make sure to head over to pubcastworldwide.com to leave a comment on the show notes page for this episode. There, you can also sign up for our show's monthly newsletter called The Brews Letter for more exclusive content from our guests and deals on drinking and travel-related merch from our sponsors. But most importantly today, I have links to the Monday to Monday playlist so you too can listen to Hustle Heavy Hip Hop along with Mike and 70,000 other listeners. All right, that's it for this week, folks. Thanks again to Mike Boyd for jumping on the show. And Mike, I hope to see you back there in New York City soon. And Gary, if you're listening, jump on the pubcast, man. I'll meet you in New York City. You can show me a thing or two about wine, and I will show you a thing or two about beer. Hashtag value exchange. Anyway, for the rest of you out there, stay thirsty, and I'll see you back here soon. Cheers.